The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Today, I'm joined by Aaron Stuber, and we're going to be talking about the role of nursing in lifestyle medicine. Aaron graduated from Oregon Health and Science University School of Nursing in 2013. Since that time, he has worked in a variety of inpatient and acute care settings. Most of his clinical experience and expertise is in cardiovascular care and disease management, where he counseled hundreds of individual patients on lifestyle modification to prevent, arrest, and sometimes reverse their chronic disease. Aaron is a board-certified lifestyle medicine practitioner through the American Board of Lifestyle Medicine, and received his training through the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, of which he's an active member. He is also a graduate of the Well Coaches online program for health and wellness coaches, one of the premier science-based programs for professional health coaches. From 2016 to 2019, Aaron co-hosted the Thought for Food podcast, a show dedicated to public education around nutrition science, lifestyle medicine, athletic performance, and critical thinking. His academic and clinical interests include nutrition science, lifestyle medicine, behavior change science, cardiovascular disease, and sports performance, as well as the prevention and treatment of metabolic syndrome with evidence-based interventions. Aaron has a background in rock climbing, mountain trail running, and functional strength training. He and his family live in the mountains of Colorado. Aaron, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Excited.
Well, we're so happy to have you on because I think talking about the role of nursing is such a critical part of making the changes towards a preventive healthcare system. And I think your perspective and your experiences are just, you know, going to be so valuable, and I appreciate you sharing them with us. Let's start by kind of from your experience. I know you worked in the hospital system. How did that inspire you towards lifestyle medicine?
Yeah, so when I came into the hospital, I guess, you know, from some perspective, I knew that it would be that the chronic disease thing was going to be a problem. But I don't think I realized just how bad it really was. And I'd been interested in nutrition long before I became a nurse. I was kind of naive and thought like, oh, well, I'll be able to come in here and give these people great data and everyone's going to change and reverse their disease and it's going to be awesome. And that wasn't the case. And then I also realized from a medical perspective that almost everything we were treating was some version of metabolic disease or its consequence. And there was nothing in place to address the problem. So we were just giving more pills, we were doing more procedures, and we were largely just giving outdated advice on diet. So I started talking to patients about nutrition, started talking about lifestyle stuff, but I really wasn't getting the results that I wanted. And I realized that behavior change was the sort of key component in there that I was missing. And so I said, all right, well, I've got to get health coach training. So I actually got the hospital to give me some scholarship money to do health coach training. And then I started working with patients to try to counsel them to better health. I started a private coaching practice, and I worked with patients outside the hospital. So often, you know, I'd sort of start the relationship in the hospital after somebody's first heart attack, and then, you know, they discharge in 3 or 4 days, and then we work together outside of the hospital. I started a nutrition task force with the head of dietary, a physician, another nurse, and we were trying to improve the food system in our little local hospital. Of course, later we were shut down by administration because they didn't really see any problems with feeding, you know, post-MI patients meatloaf and diet soda. So that was a problem. That's a huge roadblock and a moment of awakening for me. So then honestly, eventually I left the hospital and started working in primary care and urgent care and saw a lot of the same problems, outdated advice, and just really poorly managed chronic disease. So then I decided to become board certified in lifestyle medicine. And actually, lifestyle medicine as a concept is pretty new, at least technically. And when I found out about that, I was pretty excited because I, you know, most of my background was in the nutrition part and the exercise part as an athlete. But I knew there was so much more to it. You know, healthy relationships are huge if you look at the blue zones, and sleep, you know, and all of those things. And so I said, oh, finally somebody distilled all of the best parts from sort of integrative medicine and complementary and alternative medicine, get rid of some of the stuff that's maybe not so effective or doesn't have a lot of data to support it, and really distill it into this awesome package. So when I saw that, I jumped right on it, went to ACLM, became board certified. And the rest is history. But that's kind of what got me inspired, is really difficult situations in an acute care hospital setting that had me pretty disillusioned. And so I decided I needed to change so that I could create change.
Wow. You know, what a great trajectory, you know, to kind of see how you've structured the things you do to be in line in the ways that you want to make a difference. And you touched on so many things that I want to loop back around and talk more about. You know, first is, you know, how hard it is in a hospital setting to get people on the right track, right? Because it's this episodic, you know, people are sick, they're scared, you have such limited time with them, and it's all focused around the urgent reason they're in the hospital.
Exactly.
And the cause that often takes people to the hospital has been smoldering, really, for a very long time. And to really get that to reverse or at least get managed takes a lot of change, and that one touch in the hospital, which often is the only encounter people have with the healthcare system, is not going to treat their disease. It really kind of stamps out the urgency of what brought them to the hospital. You know, so right then and there, you really highlighted how important it is to have that follow-up and have it be done well, which, you know, is what you try to do.
Yeah, indeed. So our job in the hospital is to stabilize people. That's what we do. You come in, so where I spent most of my time was on a cardiac intermediate care unit. You can call that cardiac step down. You can call it progressive care. There are a lot of different names for it. People were incredibly sick. Most of the people on the floor, you know, they came in because they had their first heart attack or their second heart attack or their sixth heart attack, and they were slated for bypass surgery, or they were in there because they had an exacerbation of congestive heart failure and they needed us to give them diuretics and get the fluid off the heart and out of their lungs. And so the game is stabilization. Let's give you whatever drugs that you need. We're going to do whatever procedures we need to do to keep you from dying. And then we're going to send you home. And 2 to 3 weeks later, you know, if you're not taking your medications, you're going to come back. So that's the game that we play in the acute care setting. And so it is really hard. And there aren't, some hospitals are different. Some hospitals are doing a fantastic job of trying to keep readmission rates low. You know, Medicare will penalize hospitals now if you have a patient come back within 2 weeks. So there's a little bit of incentive to do kind of better, but not in any real meaningful way. We're not, you know, I'm not seeing health coaches, you know, get in there. And that was my big gripe, was this is a revolving door of sick care. These people aren't being told what they need to be told to get on top of this, take personal responsibility for their lives, get inspired to do that, and stay home because they're healthy. So it's incredibly frustrating. I did find a few ways to work around that. I was pretty motivated to try to make change. So we can certainly talk about some of the strategies. But yeah, that's the MO of the hospital system as it stands.
Yeah, and you know, really interesting what you were saying, that you started off trying to change the food system, and that went nowhere. And I'm trying to picture how that conversation went in terms of ending an initiative of trying to provide healthier food in the hospital. what were the reasons behind it getting shut down?
No political will to make the change. There were also some issues with a contract with a food service provider, and breaking the contract would have some potential legal ramifications and financial ramifications for the hospital. So that was part of it. But essentially, it was myself, another nurse who is now a health coach and is going to be certified soon in lifestyle medicine. She's a rock star. The head of dietary, who was totally on the same page with us, and then another physician who is also on the same, same page, very into integrative medicine, a little bit of functional medicine. So we came in with a little data package, and we said, we have a cardiac menu here at the hospital. Post heart attack patients, post cabbage patients are allowed to order meatloaf and diet soda and ice cream on the cardiac menu. Can you please explain to me how this is in line with the best literature on the topic? And so, we go back and forth and stuff like that. And really at the end of the day, there just wasn't a lot of political will. I think a lot of people higher up, I heard some of them say, I think the food options are fantastic. I think we're very progressive and we're doing a lot of great stuff for our patients. We haven't had any complaints. I think you guys are a little bit maybe naive or being a little bit too aggressive about this. We'll certainly take it into advisement, and then eventually, you need funding to do stuff like this. And none of the funding was granted to us, and we eventually just dissolved the group. And this is Boulder, Colorado. Okay, this is literally the thinnest, fittest city in the thinnest, fittest state. And we couldn't even get, I was proposing, hey, you make smoothies for patients. That's a great start. Do you think we could buy one more blender, put it in the staff kitchen, and be able to make smoothies for staff members, especially people who work night shift, who have very odd hours and would just like a green smoothie maybe at the end of their shift? And, we couldn't even get that to go through. So that's when I really realized how deeply, deeply entrenched a lot of these old patterns of thinking are, and how backwards the incentive system is to make change. It's really a fee-for-service model. And hospitals are in the business of having patients. And so it's a tough road. I felt like I was really working upstream, very frustrating, but yeah, that was my experience with that part.
Yeah. And I'm so thankful and grateful for the energy you, and I know a lot of people in lifestyle medicine, they're advocating for the same principles are doing across the country, because you're right. Inertia sets in, we do things the way we've always done them. And it takes energy, it takes a large investment of your time and in financial investment to change. But everything that you do, the next person builds on. And, I'm a big believer in everything that we do does make a difference. It just wasn't the right time and place.
Yeah, just not the right time. Perhaps the right place down the road, but I'd like to think Boulder could do a better job, and I think we will in time. But sometimes it takes a larger hospital system to be that game changer and to sort of pave that path, and then the smaller folks come along and are willing to make that change. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you also mentioned that you saw a lot of the advice people were getting was outdated. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked a lot with the cardiology team where we were, and of course the hospitalists and stuff, as we're stabilizing very, very sick people. And I would say on a weekly basis, I would have, let's say in a given 12-hour shift, I'm taking care of 3 to 4 patients with that level of acuity. I'd have a patient who just had their first heart attack, or maybe they're in for unresolved infection of their foot because they have uncontrolled diabetes, which was related to the heart disease and the obesity and stuff like that. And I'd be in the room, and I'd be in there with a cardiologist or a physician. By the way, I love the cardiologist that I worked with and the physicians. They're all phenomenal interventionalists, great at their job. They will save your life if you need a stent or a procedure or something like that. But the patients inevitably would work their way down the list, and eventually they'd get to the question about, well, my blood pressure is super high and I could probably stand to lose 30 or 40 pounds. And I've got, you just did an angiogram and you told me I have 60% occlusion in like three or four different vessels. Is there anything I can do exercise wise, nutrition wise to get control of this? Cause I'm really sick of taking these medications. They make me feel like crap. And, I just like to think there might be something better. And the knee-jerk response was like a chuckle or a laugh, and like, yeah, you know, running's good for you. I guess if you wanted to lose weight, you could do the Atkins diet. I did that for a while. You know, that was usually the advice, was try to exercise more, which is great. That's a good start. Most people who work on hearts understand that they need to be strong, and exercise is a good way to do that. But the dietary advice was always the component that was so out of date. And so it was either do the Atkins diet or do, you know, have you heard of the pickle juice diet? Like, that's big right now. Try that. It was always a personal recommendation based on whatever was big in the current media cycle, or whatever they had learned in medical school 20, 30, or 40 years ago, whether it's usually the Atkins diet, something like that. There was never a discussion or detailed discussion about what the medical literature says about preventing, arresting, or reversing coronary artery disease. We have robust evidence for that. It was just always this kind of knee-jerk, whatever's in the media, that's what you should do. And so I'd sit there and bite my tongue and wait for them to wrap up, and they'd leave, and then I'd very respectfully just sort of lay it out for them. Just say, hey, you know, the doctor you're working with is absolutely phenomenal. I trust them with my life. They may be a little bit outdated. Let me show you why that's the case, and then kind of go over some of that stuff, and then just give them good evidence-based resources for stuff that they can do. And those people often would email me when they got out of the hospital and say, hey, thank you for showing that to me. Will you work with me? Will you be my coach? Or, you know, what else should I know about this? So I got in trouble for that a few times, because as you know, people don't like to feel like you're stepping on their feet. So once word gets out that I'm sort of filling in the gaps, if you will, in the medical education around nutrition, that's a little bit controversial, and I definitely, not everyone was super excited about that, but I just got to a point where I said I have a moral obligation to make sure these people are getting the right information, because if they don't, you know, it might cost them their lives. So that's, yeah, I mean, that was kind of my role and what I was seeing on a regular basis. And I worked all over the hospital. I worked in the float pool, so I did literally every single acute care setting within that hospital system. And I saw that was the sort of in-house trend. So I just felt obligated to fix that.
And Aaron, you know, you really kind of highlight the need for the system, first of all, to meet the needs of patient care, meet patient requests. I mean, I think a lot of getting healthier through lifestyle is patient-driven rather than system driven, and where the system just isn't ready to respond. And you also, you know, bring up this wonderful question of, you know, how can nurses be used to do this education piece well, where, you know, it shouldn't be tension, it should be team-based.
Team-based, yep.
And yeah, so from your experience, what do you envision as a way a system can integrate nursing with physicians, with other members of the care team, to really help patients, you know, not just get better in the hospital, but just get healthier overall?
Well, so there's a lot to go into there. So I think I think nurses just in general in the lifestyle medicine world are pretty undervalued and underutilized when it comes to that kind of counseling. I mean, I've worked in a lot of different healthcare settings. The common theme, I think, when it comes to health and wellness counseling, if it even exists in that particular practice, is that what you really see are physicians and registered dietitians doing the majority of the work, which is totally fine, and they should be doing that. I rarely see people sort of selecting nurses to get the training and then to be utilized for that job. And when I talk to other nurses about this who are interested in changing their practice and doing more lifestyle medicine stuff, they usually tell me that they feel unsupported and that they're not taken seriously within their organizations, sort of as it relates to lifestyle medicine counseling or health coaching or whatever it is. I should say that the American College of Lifestyle Medicine has done a fantastic job of training and encouraging nurses to sort of step up and play a major role in this healthcare revolution. I am the beneficiary of that. Last year for the Lifestyle Medicine Conference, the American Board of Lifestyle Medicine for the first year opened up the board certification to nurses, also to physical therapists and other sort of allied health professionals, which was phenomenal. And I took the test, and it was just an honor to be able to sit with, you know, I don't remember how many, 350, almost 400 healthcare professionals in that room to take that very, very difficult 4-hour test. Mm-hmm. So that was phenomenal. And I think my experience is that, so I think nurses are ideally suited for implementing lifestyle medicine in both acute care settings in the hospital and primary care settings. And I'll tell you why. So nurses spend the most time with their patients in the hospital setting in particular. That's usually 12 hours at a time. There's a nurse assigned to a patient 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So that creates a lot of opportunities to counsel patients that are interested, at least the patients that are interested, in making change. So when I would work a 12-hour shift, yes, I'm busy, and most nurses are overworked, usually are assigned way too much, and that's getting worse and worse and worse. But you still have opportunities in a 12-hour shift. There are downtimes usually. And that was an opportunity to go from patient to patient to patient that I thought was interested in, at least get the conversation started and go from there. In a primary care setting, I think nurses are perfectly positioned to serve as health coaches who can help patients implement the recommendations and treatment protocols of the providers and then follow them over time, because that's what really matters, is that follow-up, that continuity of care. That also helps nurses practice at the top of their license in that setting, which is really good. Studies show that when providers and nurses give lifestyle advice, patients listen. So there's an evidence precedent there. We know for the most part that people trust us. Speaking of trust, the Gallup poll and others have identified nursing as the most trusted profession in the United States, and that's happened for the last 20 years in a row.
Oh, I'm jealous it's not physicians.
I know, and maybe it should be. And I'm not sure why that is, because physicians play an absolutely critical role in this, obviously, as you know. But for whatever reason, nurses are at the top, according to Gallup and some other people, and that has been every year for the last 20 years in a row. So if we take that knowledge, and then we know that the most important component of developing a therapeutic relationship or a health coaching relationship is to first establish rapport and trust, we're off to a pretty good start as nurses based on that data. So, you know, my personal experience was that patients often asked for my professional opinion before making any major medical decisions, since I had sort of an insider's perspective on all of the functional aspects of the hospital system. I knew which providers were safer than others. So that definitely played a role. I think nurses in the hospital setting, part of what we do is we become expert advocates for patients. And a lot of us work sort of almost as social workers, because we're setting them up for, you know, to get access to community resources that help them manage their conditions outside of the hospital. I think that's a big deal. if your community in particular has like an intensive therapeutic lifestyle change program, like an intensive cardiac rehab program that's Ornish, Pritigan, places like that, if no one's there to tell them about it, they're never going to find out, most likely. And the last thing that I'll say, I think nurses are trained to handle a tremendous amount of responsibility. We administer every drug that's ordered. We implement nearly every treatment. We closely monitor the condition of our patients, and we intervene when their physiology changes. We handle family members. We transfer patients back and forth between procedures. We protect patients from tired and distracted interns and residents, something I had to do all the time. And, you know, when people get tired, they make mistakes, and we're there to sort of watch and just make sure everything's going the way that it should. We're also the victims of verbal and physical assault. I've been assaulted 2 or 3 times by patients. So I think we can handle lifestyle medicine counseling, is my point. We are the foot soldiers in the trenches of healthcare, and I think it's time for us to get the training and to use our considerable time investment with our patients to really start doing this training. And of course, we can talk about specific ways to sort of integrate nurses into the team, but that's my overall spiel for why I think nurses are perfect for this.
Yeah, no, I think those are such important points. And, you know, we have a very team-based system. I work in an academic health center, and we do have teams including pharmacists and nurses, and the collaboration that happens, no individual could ever do as well on their own. So I couldn't agree more with what you said. My question is, you know, amongst, say, even if you took primary care physicians, so I'm outpatient primary care, and even though there's this general recognition that yes, lifestyle is important, if you surveyed primary care physicians and asked them what, you know, percent are interested in engaging their patients in an in-depth conversation about lifestyle medicine, it's a small number. You know, for whatever reason, people have their interests, and that may not be the interest of,
absolutely,
you know, everybody. Can't imagine why, but, but you know, the people have different interests, and they want to have their patient practice and the things that they do kind of model their areas of interest. On the part of nursing, I agree that what a tremendous workforce for implementing a lot of the work that needs to be done to get Americans healthier. But what do you think the interest level is? Like, do you feel
for nurses,
you know, you are clearly an advocate and proponent, and you know, I can hear your energy and enthusiasm. Do you think that others, a large percentage or a small percentage, share that?
Ooh, I wish I had good stats on that, and I don't. My personal experience, and I've learned a little bit more about this since doing the ACLM training. So the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, they have a nurse working group. And I don't remember exactly how many nurses are on them, several hundred. So the conversations that I've seen within those forums has been pretty motivating, pretty exciting, and pretty promising, I think. But then again, that's 340 nurses or so out of 3 million in the United States. So I don't know. My gut tells me that most nurses are feeling pretty burnt out and are feeling like there must be a better way to manage chronic disease, because we're elbow deep in it. That's like all we deal with, especially in the hospital setting. So I would love to see some polling done on a national level to see, maybe more broadly, I don't know that I would use the language lifestyle medicine because it's so new, and I think half of the people you ask wouldn't know what that means. But to some sort of national polling where we're asking nurses, how interested would you be in getting training in nutrition science, exercise, healthy sleep, and stuff like that, and implementing those protocols with your patients? And I bet the interest would be pretty darn high. But I don't have anything specific, and I can only I can only speculate on my personal experience, but I wish I had that data.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it would be really interesting. You know, we had started a lifestyle medicine interest group for allied health professionals here at Emory at the university level, including, you know, schools of physical therapy, the School of Medicine, you know, nursing, any allied health program that wanted to come. And the interest was quite large, you know.
Okay,
I think that there is, I agree with you. I also agree that the system isn't ready to respond and change right. curriculums, but I think that's certainly a direction that would be, you know, beneficial for all. And can you talk a little bit more about health coaching? I think just like lifestyle medicine, these are new terms and a person may not really know that they need a health coach. Can you talk about the services, the benefits?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said earlier in my story, you know, I was just going around from patient to patient, just telling them what to do, basically. I was like, hey, you have diabetes. Guess what? You can reverse it potentially if you're able to make these lifestyle changes. Look at this data. Isn't that amazing? And they look at it and they'd be like, wow, I had absolutely no idea. And we'd have maybe a 30-hour or 30-minute conversation about it. And I feel like they'd have this epiphany. Maybe they'd cry. It would be this big emotional thing. And so then I'd leave and they'd order lunch and I'd come back in and they're eating steak and, you know, drinking Pepsi. And I'm like, oh, what just happened there? What just happened? I mean, I just told you that your diabetes is not a death sentence, that you may be able to get rid of it and get off all your medications and not die prematurely or, you know, have to have your feet amputated or lose your vision or be on dialysis because your kidney shut down. How did that not stick? And so I started looking into it, and then I was like, oh, it's because I'm practicing this sort of classical top-down authoritative model, which is how the rest of medicine, because that's how I was trained as a nurse, and that's how the rest of medicine is positioned. And I was like, oh, there's some deeper psychology at work here that I'm not privy to. And so eventually I discovered health coaching as a field. And then I was, you know, looked around what seemed to be the best schools, because what I found early on was anybody could call them, this is prior to 2015, anybody could call themselves a health coach. You could take some weekend long course and, you know, call yourself a holistic health coach or a life coach or something like that. And there was no standardization behind it. And then I found some schools that really dug deep into the evidence. Well Coaches is one of them. There are many others that do this. And I said, great, there's a scholarship at the hospital. I'm going to apply for it. And if I get it, I'm going to become a health coach and see if I can learn something useful. And I did win the money. And then I went to Well Coaches and I realized that I had been doing it just totally wrong. And so health coaching as a field is trying to fill that gap between this sort of top-down model and what really needs to be done. You have to address the underlying behaviors that cause people to seek behaviors that are not serving them, and there are all sorts of ways to do that. And it really is just, it's counseling. You know, you're using things like motivational interviewing and appreciative inquiry and the trans-theoretical model of behavior change or some other things like Never Binge Again by Peter Bregman. There are all sorts of different things you can do. But they really strive to get to the underlying cause of why people are choosing to damage their health when they know otherwise. And so you just do this great counseling with people and you try to have them tap into their own intrinsic motivation and find out what kind of person they really want to be and what are their standards and what's their grand sort of wellness vision and how do we set goals to walk you towards that overall vision and show them the pain that is associated with being sick and show them what's possible if they make change versus if they stay put. Like, what are your two, it's called minding the gap. Like, what are your two alternatives if you do nothing versus if you make some change? And why does that matter to you? And who else does that serve in your life? Great, your grandkids, you know, you're around for your grandkids, and that means more to you than anything else. And so that's the sort of general idea of health coaching. And I think health coaching is the game changer in healthcare, because it's the elephant in the room that nobody has been willing to address for decades. And we're finally getting around to doing this. And I just think we can have all the best data in the world, but if we don't deal with the behavioral issues around lifestyle stuff, we're never going to get any traction.
Yeah, no, that's such a great way to explain that, because I have, you know, patients wherein I suggest, you know, seeing a health coach that will say, oh, I know what to do, I just need to do it. As a reason for not wanting to see a coach. So I think that's a really helpful explanation, that it's not just, you know, explaining, you know, nutrition or what needs to happen, but problem solving.
Problem solving, yeah. And actually, you know, coaching, really the main model of coaching is that, you know, as a coach, my job is not to tell you what to do. And I actually do very little, in a traditional sense, very little counseling specifically on nutrition or specifically on sleep when I'm doing real health coaching, because my job is to get you to come up with the answers. So I'm just there to guide you, to use some mental techniques to get you to come up with your own goals and with your own solutions, and to really feel like you own it. Like they were your ideas, you have buy-in, this is your life. And then watch them fly away, because you just sort of unlock that door for them. And so that's the true essence, I think, of good coaching. And then, of course, if you have lifestyle medicine training and nutrition training, you can weave those lessons into the overall coaching protocol, but it's not the first thing that you're doing.
Right. Aaron, thank you so much. I think just talking with you about nursing leadership and lifestyle medicine and the difference nurses can make in patients' lives is such a great perspective to have, because as you said in the beginning, I think a lot of lifestyle and nutrition and wellness programs are physician and registered dietitian driven. And the, you know, people that can impact patients' lives are really just such a broad team. And
right,
just that collaboration, I think, is going to be the most helpful in kind of turning the tide, if you will, of healthcare.
Absolutely. It takes a village. It really does. And you know, I'm advocating heavily for nurses because I think nurses are undervalued and underutilized, but I'm not advocating in the sense of like, yeah, this is just a problem that nurses have to solve. I just want nurses to be part of the team, because we're already such an integral component of the healthcare system. Let's give us the training so that we can join with the registered dietitians and join with the physicians who are doing such important life-saving work, and bring everyone else in too. I mean, I don't think there shouldn't be a single person employed by the hospital that doesn't have some basic education, I feel like, in this stuff. Because patients interact with everybody in the hospital. And if they're getting it from everybody in this like unified front, I think that's where we can do some really, really fun things.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. So for final words, I'm just curious, what's next for you?
Oh gosh, I have no idea. Well, I guess I have some ideas. I'm doing too much all at once. But yeah, so board certified in lifestyle medicine, I'm really trying to practice at the top of that license and sort of utilize that as much as possible. I'm doing another health coach training program right now through WellStart Health, which has been really fantastic. I do want to get board certification in health and wellness coaching. So after 2015, the International Consortium of Health and Wellness Coaches was created. So we now have standardization and protocols in place. We have board certification for health coaches. So I'd like to work my way to that. I have a private concierge lifestyle medicine coaching practice. I'm really interested in the digital therapeutics market, so things like Zipongo and Better Therapeutics and WellStart Health and integrating technology or integrating lifestyle medicine and nutrition into technology so that we can scale these evidence-based protocols to everybody. I think that's a really exciting, I've got podcasting, everything. I've got my hands in a lot of pots right now. So I'm just taking it day by day and seeing where I can go. But I want things to change. I'm really hungry for that. I've been hungry for it for a long time now. And so I'm doing the best I can to push for that.
Oh, well, thank you for all that you're doing. I know every bit of it helps make a big difference. And thank you so much. Yeah, for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's an absolute pleasure. I love the opportunity, and hopefully I'll talk to you guys down the road.
Yes, definitely. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.